Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 374 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing, Joe?
I'm doing good, Todd. Talking about comic books today. Lots of stuff to talk about.
That's right. Comic books and other comic books. That's my favorite comic books.
So, no preamble. I think we're all preambled out at this point.
I am. I'm totally, run down from all the great stuff we did before we podcasted it.
Right, but that's over on the After Dark. You'll have to wait a whole 3 days for that.
But I want it now.
All right. I almost released, because of the holiday, I almost released The Last Gallifrey Birds early.
Just as, as something to, while you're digesting turkey?
Right. Because I figured everyone would sit around the, after Thanksgiving, everyone's full of tryptophan,
mm-hmm.
pull up their copy that everyone has, just off their shelf, of that Van Gogh episode of Doctor Who and Heroes mm-hmm. of Wrestling, and watch it along with Grandma, Grandpa, Uncle Joe, the neighbors, bring everyone over, huddle around the old 7-inch Zenith, black and white, with HDMI hookup for some reason.
Doctor Who fans and wrestling fans and tryptophans.
Oh, my goodness. So what do we got on the show here today?
That's right. A comic that we've been talking much about gets new foil covers. A 25th anniversary hardcover for something. A wrestler is going to be on a superhero show because wrestlers and superhero shows go together like peas and carrots. And also someone working under a pseudonym was mentioned today.
Me?
Yes. No, not you. You don't have pseudonyms.
Not no
you
more. Have, I don't.
You have Sudafeds.
Oh, I wish I did. None of that stinking stuff neither.
No, you don't want that. I know what that is now. We have con news.
Yep.
Free digital books and sales.
Yep.
What we read last week, which was Thanos 13 and Doomsday Clock 1. Todd and Joe Have Issues, which was the Big Chance graphic novel by Bernie Wrightson and Jim Starlin. And at the end of the show, we're going to have spoiler-filled talk of Flash and Legends of Tomorrow.
We're also going to have a Todd's Art Attack and what we're looking forward to this week.
Oh, look at that. I messed it all up.
That's right. That's okay, though.
That's okay. I was all the Sudafeds that right. I had.
So, as we do here on the show, and this is going to be a perfect spot to plug this as well, anytime that there is a news story in regards to, I would say definitely top 9 comic book company, Valiant, and the number 1 book for the month of December, I'm calling it now, Quantum and Woody. Anytime that there's a news story about Quantum and Woody, of course, we have to cover it. Now, they say in the most recent press release, now this is just about issue 1. The press release about issue 2 has already come out, but we're not even to issue 1 yet. So we're going to deal with issue 2 when issue 1 is out, right?
Well, yeah, you don't want to get ahead of yourself. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Right. So from the latest press release, it says, due to an unprecedented demand in advance of the upcoming final order cutoff date of Quantum and Woody number 1, Valiant is informing retailers that the first issue's extreme ultra foil cover, the first in a new line of 12 covers embossed, enhanced with authentic 90s comic foil, has preemptively sold out at the distributor level. Valiant is proud to announce that it's taking unprecedented steps to avoid allocation, and we will fulfill all standing and future orders of Issue 1 Extreme Ultra Foil Cover through the final order cutoff with an array of alternate foils mined directly from the day of Trapper Keepers and Acid Wash. Buckle up because comic stores preparing for participating in the Extreme Ultra Foil variant will receive a mixed assortment of copies manufactured with vintage materials reclaimed from the following 5 foil-tastic comic classics. And they cite Wildcats number 2, which was Primordial Prism, Adventures of Superman number 505, back when you didn't even need a reason to put a foil cover there, where it was Fantastic Fireworks, Uncanny X-Men, number 316, which was the Sensational Circuit Board foil, Warlock Chronicles number 1, My God, It's Full Stars foil.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And Silver Surfer 75, Psychedelic Silver foil.
I remember that one, too.
Right. I can't get enough of this.
I can't either. And just to tell you a secret, I planned all this with Valiant to destroy the Fancy Gentleman's bank account. I went into New York Con. I was like, you just got to keep pumping them out.
If it's either this or Bullet Club shirts, so if it's going to keep spending his money on that trash, this is a much better investment.
Is that what the BC in your tweets mean? I thought it was bleeding cool.
Oh no! Listen, I'll mention Ricky Johnson by name. I got no problems there. Or Jude Terror, any of the writers over at the old Bleeding Cool. I got no problems. I think they do a fine, upstanding job over there.
That's right. I thought they were all NASCAR drivers, but that's another story.
I don't get that.
There's some of the names that you do sound like Ricky Bobby. All the never mind.
But I would be remiss. We only have one more week, of course, to win your copy of the retailer exclusive of number one. It's not the full issue, but it's the, if you attended New York Comic Con this past October and you were a retailer, you got this edition of the book along with two yellow and blue of the bands. That say Clang on them for promotional materials. We're going to be giving out two sets of those next week on the show, pulled from whoever has left a review for us on on iTunes or has amended their existing review to add in some sort of Quantum and Woody sort of thing just to kind of move it up in whatever the algorithm is. Now, once the contest is over and we give away the winners, I'm sure there'll be an episode of After Dark where I'm going to get a little bit more into all this iTunes reviewy stuff again, if you enjoy that sort of thing.
I enjoy it every time.
Todd vomiting in terror in the background there.
I wonder if I should have teased in the opening the contest. Better luck next time.
No, it's good. It was almost as though we planned it, that we had a news story that tied directly into the contest.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oof. I'm glad we keep a script for the show.
Right. So, one of the other things that we don't want to talk about is DC has announced that next summer they're going to be releasing a hardcover celebration of 25 years of Vertigo. It says the deluxe hardcover is going to relive the history of this innovative imprint as told by the people who lived it, a luxurious hybrid of oral history and retrospective art book. It's going to feature a comprehensive timeline of every Vertigo project, long-lost and never-before-seen artwork, story materials, new interviews, behind-the-scenes intrigue with Vertigo writers, artists, editors, designers, publishers, and all new short stories and illustrations from classic Vertigo creators and other top talent.
I don't hear Neil Gaiman in there anywhere.
Well, they don't name anyone yet. This is just kind of like a generic-y sort of thing of like, hey, here's a book that's coming out in 10 months.
Uh-huh.
We'll probably be soliciting it in the next 3, and then maybe 3 months after that, we'll actually tell you what's in it.
Right, that's plenty of time to back up the Brinks truck.
That being said,
mm-hmm.
You know, Todd had mentioned a couple weeks ago that show that's on AMC, what is it, Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics?
Yes.
And then the book that I mentioned, I actually ended up watching that first episode, that Sean Howe that I mentioned, who wrote that history of the Secret History of Marvel book, is in that as one of the talking heads.
Oh, really?
Yes. So if I am all about the, and again, I don't want to say the secret history, but the history of the things that I like.
Right.
You know, Todd gives me a bunch of grief about my love of classic wrestling and talking about like all that behind the scenes sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the podcasts I listen to, whether it be the Bruce Pritchard podcast, Between the Sheets, or whatever I listen to, it's all the like behind the scenes, and even wrestling from like 15 years ago, let alone 30 years ago, I love all that sort of behind the scenes looking back. If this book was just that, where it was just like, here's an oral history with as few punches pulled as we can without upsetting people,
mm-hmm.
You know, because if this was the unofficial history, I'm sure it would be a much different book. but it's being published by the company, so they might not take as many shots at people as there would be. Either way, I love this sort of stuff. The extra material, the new stories, whatever creators are involved, I don't really care. I didn't know what this was initially. I just thought, oh, this might be something interesting to talk about on the show, and it is. I'm excited. This is immediately going on the spreadsheet for August of next year.
I will be pre-ordering it when it's in the previews.
Yes.
Definitely. And if there's a Neil Gaiman story in it, this is going to, if there is a Sandman Neil Gaiman story in it, this is going to sell like gangbusters.
Right.
Because that always sells, you know, no matter what.
And I think DC is in good standing with Neil and Neil vice versa, right?
Yes, they are because of a couple of things. But I do remember when, that's why I say bank up, back up the Brinks truck, because this is the 25th anniversary. And I remember when he did, I think it was Endless Nights for one of the anniversaries. It was the hardcover. And it was like, oh, whatever it was, whatever project it was that he did, is it was supposed to be for the anniversary before it. And I remember him seeing him in interviews. It's like, oh, how come that didn't happen? He's, oh, well, schedules, things didn't quite work out, blah, blah, blah. And it, basically the way it was all worded to me was just like, there wasn't enough zeros on the check. So, but they do everything they can to keep Neil happy. And he has a lot of sway. Like, I forget what book it was that was coming out, and they had like Endless Kid or something like that in it. And it was going to be a child to one of the Endless or something. It was going to be a tie into the Endless. It was going to be in the book. And Neil was just like, nope, kibosh. You don't do it. And even when they use death in action during the Orange Lantern Luthor storyline.
Yep.
While he's alive, he has final say over all Sandman stuff in books. So that's why even when he's in this metal now, that blows my mind, because Neil got a phone call. So.
Well, he got a phone call and a paycheck.
Probably as a consultant, yes.
But I, if I remember correctly, that Paul Cornell arc on Action Comics, as you mentioned, with Luthor, didn't Neil do the dialogue for death in there?
Yep, all the dialogue he got credit for. I don't remember if it was in the book or he said it like out loud, but yeah, that's what I remember, is that he wrote all the dialogue for Death in that. Because it has to do with, do you remember when Death was in Captain Atom?
No.
Like, because there's an issue where Captain Atom, that 80s run, the silver looking one, he went, like, he was dying or something like that, and Death shows up in the comic, and Black Racer shows up in the comic, and other aspects of Death in the DC universe, and they were talking, and he's like, so your death, and the Vertigo Death was like, yeah, he's one aspect, and I'm one aspect, and that's when, and Neil saw it and went like, no, like, you don't ever get to do that with that character again. Like, she's not the aspect of Death. She is it, numero uno. That's end of conversation. And after that, she very rarely appeared in any other books.
Right. So I looked it up.
A little secret history of the Vertigo run, but go ahead.
Right. So as I'm looking this information up, she was accidentally, not on purpose, recolored so that she wasn't pale skinned, that she was like skin-colored skin?
Right. She was, yes, Caucasian-colored.
Mm-hmm. And, okay. So, a lot of people believe, and again, this is, as you mentioned this, and I just want to correct this is from an old article of a thing called Comic Book Urban Legends Revealed.
Right.
And was Neil Gaiman is it true that Neil Gaiman renegotiated his contract with DC so that his permission would be needed if anyone wanted to use Death, because he was angered over her usage in an issue of Captain Atom? And this person says, citing this interview with Neil Gaiman.
Oh, I'm wrong then.
Mm-hmm. I felt it confused thing. She wasn't an aspect of Death. She was Death. When one day Necron or the Black Racer stops existing, she'll be there to take them. If the script or lettered comic had been run by me back then, I would have noticed the continuity issue and corrected them. As it was, it's not a big deal. It was a fine comic as far as it went, but it tried to shoehorn death into DC continuity and got it wrong. So I clarified matters in Sandman number 20. And that was an issue of Sandman where she, it was with the issue with Elemental Girl.
Yep.
And she kind of explains, and it says, now after appearance, death also appeared in Ambush Bug Nothing Special.
Right, I remember that.
An issue of Legion of Superheroes as well.
Yes, and she was in an issue of Lobo's Back.
Mm-hmm. Now they missed...
I have...
right,
I have,
they missed that.
I have all those appearances. If she was in, like, a weird book... I remember the Legion. That was when Earth was destroying legions of superheroes and everybody died, and her face is in the sky. That's pretty much what her appearance is there.
Right, and then even further still, at a site called Funny Book Babylon, one says, this issue of Legion, along with the cameos in Captain Atom, led Gaiman to request that no one be allowed to use the Endless unless he give permission. When asked, Gaiman said, that never happened. And then it says, you know, writers these days do ask his permission out of common courtesy, much like the upcoming issue of Action Comics with Death, just to give you an idea of when this article was written. So things may have changed going forward, but at least in the past, just so there's some clarification there. Because when you had said that, I'm like, let me see this Captain Atom thing. And I knew about the Ambush Bug one. I didn't know about the Legion of Superheroes one.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was wrong. Chalk it up to that one time.
Well, no, listen, you're wrong. You took the discussion in a very interesting way.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
Right. And just as a quick hit of news, of course, it came out earlier this week, and we don't usually cover TV or movie stuff. Like, I'm going to mention, as this episode goes live, apparently they're going to be showing the first trailer for the new Avengers movie on Good Morning America.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that's our movie section. Our movie news, our TV news, is that former World Wrestling Entertainment and World Wrestling Entertainment legend Goldberg is going to be on two episodes of The Flash this season.
That's right.
Speculation of who he's going to play is up in the air. Now, you speculated that it was going to be Big Sur.
Yes.
Who's a character I'm only tangentially familiar with, his appearances in the Giffen DeMatteis Justice League International.
Right, it's part of the Injustice League,
mm-hmm.
which, as you know, they talk about...
Oh, no, wait, wasn't it... Well, Injustice League, Justice League Antarctica.
Yeah, but before that, early on in the run, he was a part of a group called the Injustice League that fought them during Invasion. There was a group they were called the Injustice League, and then they ended up... They were villains that fought the League, and then they went on to be... heroes in Justice League Antarctica. I think they're the first group to actually be called the Injustice League that they've used later on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but go ahead.
So I was going to say, is he a Flash villain? Is he, what is he?
Yes, he is a Flash villain. I don't remember the exact issue, but he was during the end run of Flash, which was like the last, I don't know, dozen or so issues, maybe more, maybe 20 some issues, which was the trial of the Flash, which Flash, Barry Allen, not Barry Allen himself, but the Flash, because no one knew his secret identity, was on trial for killing Reverse Flash, Eobard, because he was going to kill someone that he knew, like he had previously killed Iris West. And while they were doing it, people were – the Rogues got this suit of armor from the Monitor, who was going to later be in Crisis on Infinite Earths, and they gave it to this character Doofus – something F. Doofus was his name. He was mentally challenged, and they told him this whopper of a story that Flash was mean, and he ended up killing a mouse, and that's why Big Sur hated him, and he went in this armor trying to bust up the Flash. Flash took him to Gorilla City, and Gorilla City made him a genius, and then later, like, off-panel, he was reverted back to his Big Sur capacity and was in Injustice League and stuff like that. Yeah, so he was around before the Giffen DeMatteis run.
Well, I knew he was around before then. I was just interested to see if he was just someone that they were in. Because they needed we don't even know if this is who he's playing. You know what I mean? This is all speculation anyway.
I think he would make a perfect Big Sur.
Right.
I mean, there's other big characters that he could play, but if he doesn't play, if Big Bill doesn't play Big Sur, I'm gonna.
Big Bill, and I have a soft spot in my heart for that old Bill Goldberg. There, he had a good return to the World Wrestling Entertainment's last year, and a good time was had by all.
I hope he says "Who's next?" during the.
They're gonna work in his catchphrase.
You have to. You have to.
Now, I completely forgot that Edge, possibly at the time you're listening to this, Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame Award winner, Edge, was Adam Smasher like two seasons ago on The Flash.
And that one of the guys from the Bullet Club was on Arrow. Dusty's son, what's his real name?
Cody?
Cody, yes. Cody Rhodes was on the Arrow.
He was on the Arrow, that's correct.
Yes, and there's probably other wrestlers that was, I think there was one more that was on one of the shows. And then it seems like all the comic movies and TV shows get, that's why I said they go together like peas and carrots. You got Batista. It's just only a matter of time. If you're a wrestler, you're up for a superhero part. The Rock is going to be Black Adam. So.
Who, were we talking on here? No, it was on Podvocacy a week or two ago. They'll get another plug later on. They were talking about how John Cena should be in one of the upcoming Marvel films and right, who he should play. He should have been cast as Captain America. They should have Chris Evans as the Human Torch, John Cena as Captain America.
Okay.
That's all.
That's all?
Yeah.
That's all?
I like John Cena.
You do like John Cena. That's why you have a hat.
Right.
The John Cena hat.
People think it's a Golden State Warriors hat, which I'm more offended by.
So your Golden State Warrior / Guardians of the Galaxy / John Cena hat?
Right.
Oh, there's a lot of hats on your head, Joe.
Heavy is the head that wears hats, and it's not just because I have a giant melon head either.
Oh, you gotta love tiny hats.
Oh boy!
I'm teasing something for later. I've been holding all week.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
But anyway,
an apple falls on your head. Anyway, the last bit of news, and save this one for last, only because it's a kind of a late breaking story as we're recording this, and it's a very sensitive subject. It has been revealed that new Marvel Comics editor-in-chief, C.B. Cebulski, wrote under the pen name of Akira Yoshida 13 years ago at Marvel, writing a variety of Japan and Asian-themed comics using X-Men characters, Fantastic Four characters, Kitty Pryde miniseries. I have the X-Men Fantastic Four thing. So there was a lot of speculation of whether or not this person was real, even as far back as 10 years ago, of who this person was. Was it, you know, actually an Asian person? And it has just come out recently, within the last day or so, that it was C.B. Cebulski under a pen name. And I just want to read his response to this.
Mm-hmm.
Cebulski says, "I stopped writing under that pseudonym after about a year. It wasn't transparent, but it taught me a lot about writing, communication, and pressure. I was young and naive and had a lot to learn back then. But this is all old news that has been dealt with. And now as new editor-in-chief, I'm turning a new page and I'm excited to start sharing my experiences with up-and-coming talent around the globe." People are very upset at this.
Right.
And I'm kind of torn about this. And again, I have no horse in the fight as a 40-year-old white male of a certain level of privilege. I come into a lot of situations from a viewpoint that is already spoken for in every form of media that you could possibly think of. And we do live in a culture where people are longing to dig up or dredge up or pull up anything that you have ever done ever in your history. and somehow use it in a negative way. Now, I will say, posing as another nationality to get work when denying possibly work of someone who is actually that nationality is and could be a big issue. We really don't know how far this ruse went. For me, though, I see this as something that happened over 10 years ago. It would seem as though no one was hurt, and it would seem as though no one lost work over this. And he seems to be remorseful for his actions.
Now, I would only slightly argue with what you just said right there is someone did lose work, because what I read, and I don't want to get into trouble, is that he kind of did this too to get around certain regulations that Marvel had at the time so he could get more work, which they would have given to anybody else. Like, he was only allowed to do so much or something like that. But once again, all the facts aren't in because it's early for me. So on that, it seemed like someone else, like, he shouldn't have had that job, just not because he was Asian or wasn't Asian, if you know what I mean.
Right.
It was more that he took it, so it would have been under an assumed name regardless. You know what I mean? But he took that, and obviously I didn't know that it was all, like Asian stories too, which changed a lot, because a lot of people have worked under pseudonyms. I mean, Jam Demandis talks about all the time how he's had one of them was he wrote stories as somebody, and then the one was he was Wally Lumbago for an issue of Star Wars because he wrote it as a tribute to his kid or something like that, and made the character a pacifist, and in the end they're like, no, he has to like go out in a blaze of glory killing people, and he was like, if you're gonna do that, take my name off the story. So like, people have worked pseudonyms, but this is very like gray to me. Like, I see what's wrong, but I don't see working under a pseudonym that's wrong, even if it was, you know, a different ethnicity years ago. But then if you're going to tie the stories to that, like it making seem authentic, that someone knows like the backstory and the history and the heritage of these characters, and you're not, then that makes it duplicitous, if that makes any sense. So like, I'm just like, there's a lot of gray here for me.
Right. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. And it's not in the state that we're in, it's not the worst thing that someone has ever done. So, and I know that's not the gauge you should use, but I'm like, I'm not gonna burn him in effigy over this. If it was something like, you know, that was, to me, was horrible, then yes.
Right.
Give the guy a second chance.
If he continued to deny it, if he showed no remorse, you know, if he continued to do it for years upon doing so.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as Todd mentions, it's a gray area, but it's a pretty big story, so we have to mention it. Obviously, I understand most of the outrage in regards to it. This is just my personal take on it. He seems legitimate in his empathy for what he did. Maybe I, coming from someone who worked the better part of the last 15 years under an assumed name as well. And again, I'm trying to make a joke. When I was doing... Now, and again, this is... Just to add some levity and we'll move on.
Right.
My wrestling name was Leonard F. Chikarison. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, the only place that I did commentary was Chikara. Around 2009 or so, I started doing commentary for a joint promotion of Dragon USA, which was going to be the American arm of a Japanese company, and Evolve, which was the American arm of said American company. My other commentator was a gentleman by the name of Lenny Leonard. Okay? The booker of the promotion, for the first year that I was doing commentary, my name was, he was Lenny Leonard. I was the new guy. Lenny had come in from his previous venture. So my name, for the longest time, was Chikara-san.
Oh, boy.
Now, this was not my decision, and a lot of people got a kick out of it because Chikara-san, Chikara-san, a Japanese promotion based in America. I see what he's doing there. You know what I mean? I was in no position to say, hey, no, this is wrong. At no time did I attempt to portray myself as an Asian or Asian American character in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. But again, a lot of, you know, I see, maybe that's why I'm like, eh, give him a break, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. That's my little anecdote about that story.
Yes.
So moving along, speaking of out of the country, there are two big conventions happening overseas this weekend, Todd.
Oh, really?
Yes. There is the Wales Comic Con, which is taking place wherever Wales is in the UK. I don't have a map in front of me.
A globe. You didn't go to the globe store?
I have a road atlas in my car. A lot of your wrestling entertainers are going to be there. Sting is going to be there. Not the singer, but the... what do you call him? The Kabuki? What do you call him?
Kabuki Man.
Kabuki Man, not Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD.
Right, there's what is it? There's Surfer Sting and Kabuki Sting.
Right. It appears to be a lot of Lord of the Rings types, a lot of Pirates of the Caribbean types, a lot of Gotham types. Road Warrior Animal is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
As is Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
I saw him wrestle once.
Mm-hmm. You did?
Yes, I did.
You don't want to talk about that now?
No, I'm good.
All right. Steven Oog is going to be there.
Now that's the Mark photo I want.
Right, that's the Mark photo. And you should, speaking of Mark photos, I was going to say you should go to the site and check out the Mark photo that they have for a, let's just say Brutus the Barber's picture was when he was a fan of Spectrox.
Oh boy.
Steven Oog looks fantastic in his. Mitch.
Wait, I just want to say with Steven Oog.
Yes.
Is if I got pictures, I would pay for 8 pictures because that scene in Walking Dead where he says he has a very expressive face.
Right.
And I would just have him do like 8 different expressions. And it would be like the very expressive faces of David Oog.
Mitch Pulidi is going to be there.
Oh, he ruined Magic for me.
Thank you very much. As is, and that's the only thing I know him from. As in Corin Nemec is going to be there, Todd.
That sounds like an Atlantean. I don't know who that is.
Corin Nemec was Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was in the video for Whiskey for My Men, Beer for My Horses.
I don't know what that is.
That's actual song, and he was in the video for that.
One can only hope that this is a resurgence for his career.
Kind of, he's about to hit Parker Lewis's Can't Lose's Pulp Fiction. Like, he's going to have his Travolta moment.
Right.
And he's going to be back.
I hope so. Now, there's also a convention happening in Tokyo. And this one has a ton of guests. Michael mm-hmm. Rooker is going to be there. Nathan Fillion. Carl Urban, who you would know as
Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd, right. Steve Wozniak, Stan Lee, and Mads Mikkelsen. Are you aware of who this person is?
No, who's Mads Mikkelsen?
He was, and again, I, Cassilius in Doctor Strange.
Oh, okay.
And he's also Galen Erso from Rogue One.
Okay, I know who you're talking about now. I would throw a bunch of yen at him to get a picture.
Right, that'd be a cool one. Jim and Dan's Comic and Toys Show in West Alexandria, Ohio, is going to have featured guest Tony Moore. And for some reason, all of the propaganda for their show calls him Colonel Tony Moore.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he has like a white suit and a cigar.
Okay.
It would be fantastic.
And I hope our good friend Tom Derenick draws him.
That's like art.
That's like art?
Yeah, because it would be him, an artist, drawing an artist.
Mm.
That's art somehow.
Gotcha. Also, and lastly, is the WinterCon in New York at some casino somewhere. It'll be in the show notes.
Let's go.
All right. They're having a Blade Runner reunion.
Harrison Ford?
No. Rutger Hauer, Sean Young, Joanna Cassidy, William Sanderson, and Kevin Thompson.
Mm.
Kevin Thompson, who I think is a little person, because in his biography it has him as an Ewok as well.
Mm. Tallest Ewok.
Right. There's a Buck Rogers reunion as well.
Let's go.
All right. I'm right there with you. And also appearing there is Kathy Najimy.
Who's Kathy Najimy?
You would know her as the lead or the second lead in Sister Act.
I didn't see Sister Act.
Are you aware of Sister Act?
Yes, that's where they act like sisters.
The Whoopi Goldberg film where she hides out in a nunnery?
Yes.
All right.
She shouldn't make a habit of that.
Oh, boy. And last but not least, Scott Schwartz.
Is that from Toy Story?
That is not the toy starring Richard Pryor, but he's also Flick from A Christmas Story.
That's right.
Quite the bit of range on that kid.
It is. Flick? Flick who?
I pled dumb. Speaking of which, sometime this holiday season, I'm making my kid watch Christmas Story.
As you should.
Yes. He's never seen it before.
You should have took him to the play in Scranton.
Oh, I didn't know. I missed it.
I think there was a play or a musical or something.
This is a play.
Right. And if you went and you could have won tickets to go see the real Toy Story house. Let's go.
Christmas Story house.
Yeah, Christmas Story.
Toy Story on the mind there, brother.
Well, you said the toy. He was in the toy, wasn't he?
Yeah, but you said Toy Story first. You called the toy Toy Story.
I'm confused.
All right. If you don't want to be confused, you can head over to soontobenamednetwork.com or soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com for all of the shows in our great little podcast network, whether it be this show, whether it be Longbox Heroes After Dark, whether it be Podvocacy, that's their second their shout-out here today, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Fresher in Parlance, actually, Fresher and his wife are barracuda hunting these days. That's why there hasn't been an episode, yes. Talking Gimmicks, Paladins of Voltron. Did I say Puzzle Warriors 3? Yeah, I'm trying to do this from memory. AIM Downsides podcast, which was at the center of a plethora of controversy this week, Todd. I think it even shut down the Podbean site that it's attached to.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy. But all of those great shows, and anytime any of these folks appear on any other podcast, they'll be on soontobenamednetwork.com, soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. Moving along, there's a bunch of sales still going on. It's as though there's some sort of... Hey, Todd, have you ever noticed that none of those Cyber Monday sales actually end on Monday?
They don't?
No. I constantly get emails that's like, hey, our Cyber Monday sale is extended all week. It's like, then why am I fighting so hard to buy everything on Monday? Leave me alone.
Well, because you only have so much internet, and then it runs out.
Right.
It's a finite resource.
Oh, if net neutrality has anything to say about it, Todd, but don't get me started.
I'm more of a net neutral evil kind of guy.
You're net chaotic neutral?
Yes, chaotic neutral, most likely.
There you go. So Marvel is still having a sale on a bunch of their collections of stuff coming from 2017, as well as the entire run of Marvel Max stuff and all sort of like tangentially related stuff. Miniseries is Home, the Born, like the Punisher Born thing that was done by Garth Ennis, Kingpin miniseries, Bullseye miniseries, Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe, all that sort of stuff. Kind of like the harder edge Punisher stuff is all on sale.
Right.
And somehow tied into this, and I'm not complaining, okay? Because it says Punisher Max, but it's actually like Marvel Max stuff. So, Alias is included in sale.
Oh.
So, hey, that's a really good comic book. You should go pick that one up.
That's right. I hope Brian Michael Bendis does more of those.
I'm tugging on my collar as you say that. Oh, boy. Image, Valiant, Dynamite, and Boom are all having sales on everything. Boom, you're good. Valiant, you're good. Image, you're good. Dynamite, you got to enter that code to get that sale price. It's pretty much everything half off or better.
Cool.
Now, DC, on the other hand, I'm not going to get on a soapbox about net neutrality. I'm going to get on a soapbox about things that are important, Todd. The section of books in their sale.
Right.
Where are we putting this on the list of things that I like to complain about the most? What gets chosen for the digital sales? iTunes and what else? What are the other things? Pins? Right.
When they don't complete a run of trade paperbacks.
Right. That's one. That's a good one too.
I'm trying to think because you hate so much Best Buy.
Right. Best Buy still on the list.
Unless they're a sponsor, then that'll change.
Mm-hmm. Hop into Best Buy.
Doctor Who.
I don't hate Doctor Who. That's part of the gimmick. Come on.
That's kayfabe, brother. Trying to think of what else you hate. Ryan Reynolds.
Right. Okay. All right.
I'm rambling them off. I'm trying to think. All the stuff that I poke you with. Let's see.
There was something.
A gentle ribbing. Right.
Talking Dead commentator Phil from Chicago.
I wish you beat me to it. I would say his name.
Right. Undefeated UFC streak, whatever.
Right.
Okay. So, the theme of this sale is annuals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, one, of course, they're doing this as a tribute to us because we're the ones that brought annuals back.
That's right. We're still working on the letters page.
And it's, you know, all the DC Rebirth annuals are in there. So as I always say, Rebirth books usually get cut in price. Annuals are typically $5. You can get them for $2. Right? So you're good.
Right.
So then we get into them and they have like, here's all of the Superman annuals and here's all the Batman annuals. And here's some DC or some Justice League annuals. Here's all the Flash ones. Here's all the Green Lantern ones. And then we get into, like, some scattershot ones, right? Everything from, like, All-Star Squadron to, you know, Deathstroke stuff to, right?
Right.
So, the problem for me with this is, they could have used this as a perfect opportunity to get all of their annual events together. You know what I mean? Like when DC, like Marvel doesn't, but when DC would do like, here's an annual event like Bloodlines, right?
Eclipso.
Right. No representation of Eclipso anywhere in this. There's like a third of the Bloodlines annuals in here, right?
Right.
And then even further still, not a single one of the JL Ape annuals.
Oh.
None of them.
That's so sad.
That's insulting.
I'm trying to think what that other annual crossover was. There was Bloodlines,
Armageddon?
There was Eclipse. Armageddon, that's a really good one. I liked Armageddon.
Now, okay, so there's lesser ones. Now, okay, I apologize. The Flash and Batman Justice League Ape ones are in here.
As they should be.
But there's seven of them. So you get two parts of his seven-part story.
Yeah, but you get apes.
Right, you do get apes. But some of the other annual schemes that they did, and again, incomplete throughout the course of this, Armageddon is mentioned, Eclipso, Bloodlines, then they did like an Elseworlds one, where all the annuals that year were Elseworlds themed. Then
yes,
there was
the Dead Earth.
Then there was the Year One ones. Then there was the Pulp Heroes ones.
I remember that.
Right. Then there was this Planet DC one, which I have no idea what that is. And then, of course, JL Ape.
Love a good annuals crossover.
Right. So, and then it's like they're all scattered. Like, that would have been a perfect opportunity for, like, here's all of those. Like, you might have gotten someone who won. Who do these things even exist in print anymore? Would you be able to find them? Like, selling them at 99 cents a pop, you might get someone who's curious and like, oh, all seven of JL Apes are here, I'll get them all, you know? Or the entire run of Bloodlines is here, I'll get all of them, because I have nothing better to do with my life.
Right.
Now that all of Bloodlines isn't here, I actually have to do something with my life.
I have to go hunt those down in back issue bins and on eBay.
So, all of that will be in the show notes, as well as the new freebies. They have the first issue of the most recent run of Black Panther available for free. They have the first issue of Infinity War. They have the first issue of Astonishing X-Men, the Joss Whedon penned comic book, and the first issue of the 60s Fantastic Four. Those are your Marvel freebies for the next, like, 3 weeks.
Hmm. Wonder if they tie into anything coming up.
I don't know.
Avengers has nothing out. Fantastic Four has no half of the team getting together.
Right.
Right, so.
So I've talked for a bit.
Yes.
I'll let you start with what we're going to talk about from last week.
Yes, which is the book we were both looking forward to the most, which was Doomsday Clock number one by Jeff Johns and art by Gary Frank. This is the either much awaited or the much maligned sequel to Watchmen, depending on what side of the fence you're on. It is years later after the ending of the original Watchmen miniseries, and things have fallen apart. The truth has come out about the plan that Ozymandias had, and there is a Rorschach running around trying to get things ready as the world is once again on the brink of nuclear disaster. There's new characters introduced. There's a mystery of this Rorschach. Who his partner is, we find out is kind of interesting. Once again, it has, like the Watchmen miniseries, it has stuff in the back, like articles from newspapers and files that gives you information. I read this. I enjoyed it. I think it was it had some really great scenes, but I think this is overall going to be a larger story, and I want to see where it's going. I think it's a slow burn, giving us all the information that we need. I enjoyed the writing. It made me want to reread Watchmen, which, by the way, I pulled off my shelf and started the other day.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, so that makes it interesting. I want to see if there's any, parallels or anything like that, but like I said, it's told through the journal for Rorschach, and I'm not stopping, you know, like I enjoyed it, and I got the lenticular cover. Which one did you get?
I got the lenticular cover as well.
Because it lenticulates good.
Yes, it does. DC is doing a much better job at their lenticulation than Marvel is. Marvel's lenticulation is poor.
It is.
So I was trying to find the original announcement about Doomsday Clock coming up. Mm-hmm. And I very well could be wrong, because obviously this has been such a huge book over the last couple days since it was released last week that it's tough to find the original announcement of this from almost a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
Right.
For some reason, I remember this originally being announced as a four-issue miniseries, that it was going to be, like, weekly or something, but I vividly remember it being only four issues.
I do. If it wasn't four, it was five or six.
It definitely wasn't 12.
Right, it wasn't 12, and then it wasn't, then it, they mentioned that somehow it's going to be these issues, and then it's going to be 1 year later again or something in the books.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about, yeah, so this is one of those darn crossovers that expanded because they had a bigger and better ending. Mm-hmm. So complain about that, Joe.
Well, I don't follow Jeff Johns on Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to complain about it because I did enjoy the issue. I love the mysteries that have been set up. Like, who is the new Rorschach? Why is he working for Ozymandias?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Mime and Marionette are the two people that break out of jail?
Yes, which are two new interesting characters.
Right, and there's a lot of speculation of who those characters are supposed to be analogs to. There's already speculation of who the new Rorschach is going to be. And they're saying that they need to find Dr. Manhattan. And of course we get the flashback to the end of Watchmen when he said he's going to leave to go someplace more quiet. Right. And all the way back to the New 52, there was speculation in conjunction with the Before Watchmen stuff that somehow the New 52 was going to be tied into some sort of new universe that Dr. Manhattan had created, which is why when Rebirth came back, there were people that remembered certain things, there were certain relationships that were missing, certain, you know, characters weren't exactly where they were supposed to be, and all of that was going to come back into, I guess, what this book was supposed to be.
Right.
So it's the strength of those mysteries, based on the strength of how good DC has been now for the better part of the last almost 2 years, that has me interested in what's going to happen next. It was a beautiful book. Geoff Johns, Gary Frank do great work. This felt more like a spiritual successor to the original Watchmen than all of those Before Watchmen books were.
Except for one or two. I think like the Darwin Cook was really good. There was a couple.
Yeah, the Darwin Cook Minutemen one was good.
Right.
But it felt like more fluff than anything else. And that's not a knock on Darwin Cook. Rest in peace. It didn't have the same gravitas that Watchmen had. It was a little bit of a life story.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. I feel as though with the extension of this from a 4-issue miniseries as it was originally announced as, or even a 5 or whatever it was, I don't know when it changed to 12, but obviously the original Watchmen series is 12 issues, so this has to be 12 issues. It's poetry, so it rhymes. I said I was going to stop saying that on the podcast, but I don't care because I like saying it.
Mm-hmm.
There felt like there was very little story here, but that little story was bolstered by all of those mysteries. And it's whether or not you want to see the resolutions to those mysteries of whether or not you were interested by the little bit of story that they gave you. In my opinion, I am very intrigued by these mysteries, so the little bit of story was enough for me to come back next month.
Mm-hmm.
This is not me saying I didn't like it, but it's going to feel much like I did not read Watchmen when it originally came out in single-issue form.
Right.
And obviously, if 2017 me read 1986 Watchmen as it was coming out in single issues, not knowing the depth and change that it would have on the entire comics industry, I don't feel as though this book is going to change the comic industry. I'm going to make that bold prediction here.
I'm gonna say no because, and this isn't a knock at Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. It's gonna be a rehash of Watchmen with a new take on it. Do you know how revolutionary, like people make joke or whatever, how revolutionary Watchmen was at the time? Like, I don't think you can change comics as much because where can you go with it? You know what I mean? Like, at that time, comics were just like, you know, bang them up superhero stuff. After Watchmen, it changed the way we looked at superheroes. It changed the way we look at comics, the kinds of stories you could tell in comics. There'll never be another book that changes comics the way Watchmen did. In my feeling, maybe the book that changed comics a little bit was The Authority, because superhero teams were different after The Authority. Like, they all became that, like, you know what I mean? Like, less costumes, more like a feel to them, like Avengers, especially even with Bendis's run. But to change comics again, Watchmen is the one and only. And I went back and I've read a couple issues, and man, every time I've read Watchmen again, I get something new out of it. I notice something new. I notice a small thing, and that's how I know it's one of the best comics ever read.
You can draw a line from The Authority to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes, that's what I... Yes.
Right, and it's not a very long line that you have to draw.
No.
It's essentially... And see, that's the thing. Authority, to me, was... it was Warren Ellis who did it originally, right?
Yes, because okay. That was his... Yes.
It was him and Frank Quitely, if I remember correctly.
Right,
no, the Marvel Brian Hitch, art. Right?
Brian, yeah, it was either Brian Hitch with, I get confused on which one, but I think it was, yeah, now that you're right, it was Alan Brian Hitch.
Right, so it was them, I think, looking at the way that superhero team books were at the time, both on the Marvel side, but more so on the DC side, because that was when Grant Morrison had just done the Big Seven over at DC with JLA. That was kind of when Batman changed to who Batman is today.
Around, yes.
Because that was like a tonal shift for Batman where Batman can essentially do anything.
I would say it was way before that.
You think so?
Yeah, I think Frank Miller gets a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier than that, like Frank Miller and Year One and all that changed the tone of Batman way before Grant Morrison.
Right.
In my opinion, anyway.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Maybe Grant added the he's got a plan for everything, but even in that, kind of like you go back to Dark Knight Returns, and he had a plan for Superman. You know what I mean?
That's true. But I think it was Grant dialed it up to 11, where Batman by himself took down like 5 white Martians.
Right, and then it was like even Mark Waid a little later with the Tower of Babylon, which he's like, I got a plan to take all of you out, if right. anything ever, and stuff like that. Where he became kind of the jerk.
Right.
I don't mean the jerk like Steve Martin. I mean like a jerk. It's like, yeah, we're a team, we're friends, but if anything happens, I will punch you in the throat.
Remind me off camera, off mic, so I can talk about my Naven Johnson as Batman pitch.
All right.
We kind of lost the train of thought here, but if you enjoyed Watchmen, if you enjoyed what's going on currently in DC, this is in the last year and a half, 2 years, this is essentially DC putting those things together. I don't think it's going to be the groundbreaking, game-changing thing that the original Watchmen was, Dark Knight Returns, any of that sort of stuff like that. But I definitely think when it's all said and done and all 12 issues are out, I'm sure it'll be an enjoyable read once everything is resolved, I guess. Like, once the puzzle pieces are put together.
And I just want to see how layered it is, if it's, I'm saying that's going to be as layered as Watchmen. But like I said, reading this, you know, Watchmen, you see all the groundwork laid. When we get to the end, this might be an amazing first issue, mm-hmm. looking back. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
Okay, so, but I'm done then.
So, the other book that we read from this past week was Thanos number 13, the introduction of the new writer, Donny Cates. We talked about him a week or two ago with his taking over Doctor Strange. He's now taking over Thanos from Jeff Lemire with art by Jeffrey Shaw. So I want to say this. I enjoyed this book a lot. Mm-hmm. I really like Jeffrey Shaw's art. A lot of the perspective stuff that he did to really show how imposing Thanos is. He essentially goes to the Chitauri world and kind of sort of takes it over already just because he's Thanos and that's what he does. Until Ghost Rider 2099 shows up and brings Thanos to the Black King, right?
He's not actually Ghost Rider 2099 though, right?
He certainly looks like Ghost Rider. They don't say that he's Ghost Rider 2099. They say that he's a Ghost Rider from the future.
Who's a character we know.
Is he?
That's what they say. They say that he's someone that the Ghost Rider is. I'm reading it right now. The Ghost Rider is and has been many things, in fact. When he's still alive, you may even know him by another name.
Hmm.
But it is important to note that he is not, in fact, a liar. So I think they're implying that he's somebody we know, and he became the Ghost Rider in the future.
Okay, so that's me making a leap saying that it's 2099 because he just kind of looks and feels like Ghost Rider 2099.
Right. At least after what I read, that to me sounds. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. So Ghost Rider brings Thanos to the Black King, and that's where things kind of roll from here.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I enjoyed this very much. My only complaint about this is the name of the story gives away the end of the book.
It does?
The name of the story, which is plastered right across the top, is mm-hmm. Thanos Wins.
Right.
So when there's the mystery of who the Black King is, to me there was no mystery of who the Black King was.
Right.
If they waited to say Thanos Wins until the last page of the book and it wasn't plastered on the cover of the book, mm-hmm. I might have been a little bit more surprised as the last page of the book.
I gotcha. I wasn't surprised either on that. But the thing that I did love as a Thanos fan is, and I liked Lemire's run because it depowered Thanos, like made him vulnerable, which is a story you don't see often. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So, but this brings him back to Thanos that I love, just like the kind of Thanos is. He's a jerk. He's literally one of my top three villains of all time. And this is kind of that. It's like he just shows up. He just takes over a planet. Like, me or you, look at our watch. And he just like does that. And then it's the way he treats people is, I mean, there's almost no better villain. And Coates just gets that to me. And that's the part that I loved about this book. I want to see where the rest goes, and I have my theories on who Ghost Rider is. But just the fact that he's just a bad, bad Titan again, I'm down with it.
Right.
Bad man.
So Donny Cates doing a real good job on the Doctor Strange and Thanos books over at Marvel. So if you're not reading those out, check out Redneck over at Image and whatever else stuff that he's putting out. He's getting a thumbs up over here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what's coming out this week, hopefully. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you wait for the trades, whether you get them sent to your home, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, be prepared for whatever books are coming out. The fifth Wednesday month, our books are late to the store, so who knows what's actually going to be there. I got my fingers crossed since I show up late. Hopefully the shipment will get there. But again, with it being a fifth Wednesday month, it's a kind of short shrift of books. A lot of annuals, a lot of stuff that's slipped off the schedule that's getting back in to be in for this month. Todd and I are both keeping track of not only however many books that we're getting from each publisher. Next year, it's going to be the dollar amount, but we're also attempting to get what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. You have a 3 correct guess over me, so let's see if you can widen that gap with only some 5 to 6 weeks left in the year.
And I almost put the lock on it.
Right.
That's
a pretty big lock.
Yes. Is the book you're looking forward to most Batman Annual 2?
No.
Is it Kill or Be Killed?
It is Kill or Be Killed.
It is Kill or Be Killed.
Yes. And I'm going to flip it on you that Batman Annual 2 is the one looking forward to coming out.
It is not.
Oh, my goodness.
Would you like to take another swing, or would you like me to tell you?
Tell me.
It is Super Sons Annual 1.
Wow.
Which is going to be a crypto slash, I forget what it's the Bat-Hound anymore. It's Damien's dog. And that's going to be the story. And I am a sucker for crypto stories and any animal story, so I'm all down for that. I don't know who's writing it. I just saw the cover, and I was like, oh, and the Bat Hound sold.
Titus,
yes.
Titus is the dog's name.
O'Neil?
Damien, and you would know better than I. It's written by Peter J. Tomasi.
Right.
With art by Paul Pellier.
Yay!
All right, look, we're both wrong.
So that keeps that, no, there's no movements.
Right. No up nor down.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to click around. It is the holiday season. Click on our little store button. Purchase yourself a shirt or a sticker with our fancy logo on it. Enjoy us the whole year round, whenever is left in the year, of course. Or if you need anything else, click on the Amazon link across the top of the page. As part of their affiliate program, anything that you purchase through Amazon, we get a little bit of a kickback from, and it costs you nothing else extra, and it makes Todd and I feel better. Todd, being at the holiday season, we had a ton of stuff purchased over the last week.
Did we?
We did. We had someone purchase a ton of Five Nights at Freddy plush characters. Are you aware of what Five Nights at Freddy is?
Is that a Nightmare on Elm Street five-part story?
No. It is a teenager-themed survival horror, kind of like the... Have you ever played like a Resident Evil type game?
I have, I think, at least. Right.
So it's the same way that that's set up, but you're trapped overnight in a Chuck E. Cheese sort of knockoff thing.
Oh.
Right. Someone also purchased Funko Pops of Robot from the animated series, Beast from Beauty and the, and also a DuckTales box set with Scrooge, Webby, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Someone also purchased a Canon Rebel camera, which is pretty fancy. And I need to mention this. Someone also purchased a World Wrestling Entertainment Terry Funk action figure, a Super Mario Odyssey strategy guide, a Super Mario Odyssey amiibo of Mario himself, and someone actually purchased a Super Mario collector's pin.
Collector's pin?
Mm-hmm.
Good for them. Now, good on them.
I mentioned these four items together because sometimes it's always good to give and give again.
Oh, okay.
If you have any questions about that, you can always ask later.
I'm writing. You know how there's notes that you don't even know about.
All right, good. So, Todd, wasn't there an art attack this week or two or three?
Yes, there was at least two. I'm opening it up now because I had my thing open for what we were picking for. But so we have one from Euronymous again.
Yes.
Which is Bow from Burnham.
Chris Burnham.
For Chris Burnham. I couldn't make out the thing. It looks like it's a 5-minute sketch, by the way it says.
Yes.
And it's very nice. Hey, you got a bat cow? I love cows that are involved with bat. So is he still around?
Bat cow?
Yes. I think he was. Yes, he was mentioned in Super Sons a few issues ago.
Right. I know he's been mentioned by Damian in bat books within the last year.
So good for him. The bat cow is still kicking. And in my sketchbook, I ended up getting an animated series Catwoman by Annie the Kitty, a.k.a. our friend Becky, who was on in After Dark a few episodes ago discussing her to the New York Comic Con.
Allegedly to every single word in that sentence.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I should have said allegedly many, 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 many times.
Becky did a good job. I didn't know you allowed people like that to draw in your books.
People like that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. British people.
I'll just let that lay there. Hey, Alan mm-hmm. Davis drew a sketch in my book, and he's British.
Oh, okay. I'll allow it.
You'll allow it? If you want, I can get you something cheap. She works cheap.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'll write that down later. So, Todd and Joe have issues?
Yes.
Okay. Todd and Joe have issues this week is Incredible Hulk and the Thing, Big Change. Written by Jim Starlin with art by Bernie Wrightson. Now, this is a book I was unfamiliar with. Part of the Marvel graphic novel series. Where I said the death of Captain Marvel was the only one I'm familiar with. I forgot about the Dazzler the movie one.
Did you ever read X-Men God Loves Man Kills?
Yes, that one too, yes.
Let's see, did you ever read the John Byrne She-Hulk one?
No, I didn't know that. I thought, you know, they did the actual regular series. I didn't know it started out as a graphic novel.
Yes, that was another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you read Doctor Strange, Doctor Doom.
Right, but I didn't know it was, like, you know, so this book, initially when it was published, it's part of the, what do you call it here, the American Graphic Novel series.
Right.
Number 29 in a series of, I think, 40 or whatever it was. Right. I was unaware, one, that such a thing was a thing. You know what I mean? I thought I didn't know they were a collected set.
They were just numbered. I didn't know if they were a collected set, but you know
right.
what I mean?
I didn't know that they were numbered even.
You know what? I didn't know back then. I found that out later.
Right.
I just thought they were all individuals. You know what I mean?
Right. So the crux of this is the Thing and Hulk are pulled to a different planet to deliver documents to a scientist who has been captured by criminals. If complete the job, they will each get a wish. That's about as bare bones as it gets with this, right?
That's pretty much the story, yes.
Right. So this was suggested to me by my friend Jesse, a longtime listener to the show, good guy all around. So I was kicking myself that I had never read this before.
Right.
This is, I want to own every page of art in this book.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful.
Todd, I cannot get over how beautiful this book is, how action-packed this book is, how funny this book is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this book literally has everything.
Right. Like, and the thing, the strength of how beautiful it is, Bernie Wrightson is known for his horror, so he does a great job on the aliens. Like, that's where, like, it stands out. Now, his Benjamin Grimm is, like, beautiful. So, yeah, and his drawing of, give me one second, of Blaster McMassive as the villain is fantastic. Oh, no, wait, it's Banger McCrusher, my mistake.
Banger McCrusher.
Yes, which is half Thing, half Hulk. And it looks really, he does a really good job on combining them so it's not too like weird. It works just enough. And I always said that when I was seeing the trailers for Thor Ragnarok, that this book had a slight, it's kind of what they modeled some of the Hulk Thor stuff off of.
Okay.
From the movie. Like them trying to like be in disguises and stuff, and it doesn't work. I mean, now granted, it's not the Hulk in the movie, it's Banner, but that's why I was hoping at some point the Hulk put a squid on his head during Thor Ragnarok.
But like I said, this book literally has everything from you. It has the origin of the Hulk, it has the origin of the Fantastic Four, it has the origin of Thing. You establish what version of the Hulk that you're getting within two pages, and there's even a really funny Superman joke in with it. You get established who the Thing is and what the Thing's relationship is with the Yancey Street Gang within two pages. We get what the mission is within three pages, and then we're off and running with action, adventure, and comedy. This, I would honestly say, is maybe the perfect comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful. That's the other thing. It is one of the most striking comic books I've ever looked at in my entire life.
Yes, it is. I mean, I'm actually shocked you've never read this, to tell you the truth.
Never. I'm a Luddite, Todd. Leave me alone.
Okay.
So this book comes with my highest recommendation. I'd never read it before. And like I said, I highly recommend checking this out because it's awesome.
Yes. And if you do get all the pages, I just want the last one, and you can have the rest.
And it's such a good call, like it's such a subtle callback too, because you know the Thing shows up and the Yancey thing were throwing tomatoes at him,
mm-hmm.
and he still has the tomatoes all over himself for like the first like fifth of the book,
right?
And there's a part where while the Thing is talking, the Hulk is just behind him, like looking at whatever's all over him, like eating it and everything else. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the book, the last page, or the last couple pages, is the Hulk putting ketchup on a bunch of
hamburgers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I like the fact that it's weird because Thing has to be almost this, like the brains in the outfit. And it's like a weird, like he has to watch over the Hulk, which is usually the battle between the two of them. I don't know how to explain it. It's very interesting, the dichotomy between them and how the thing still keeps getting, you know, he's the butt of every joke throughout this book. Like literally, like when the Hulk jumps off and the Thing has to walk, it's just, it's ridiculous. You said, this was one of those books I always loved and I always pushed. And like I said, I have a copy of this and I'm holding it in my hand right now. And you know, I love this book.
I agree. It's great. So what do we got for next week, Todd?
I didn't even know that we were having a sale on DC Annuals, so it might be in the sales. I'm going to go with Superman Annual number 11, the Alan Moore story, who wrote Watchmen that we talked about today. So it's all coming together, which is the story for the man who has everything.
That is. I was actually going to mention that as... You know, when I was going off on my rant about what was chosen, what wasn't chosen, why it was chosen, everything else, I was going to say, don't listen to me, just go buy that annual. And there you go. It's synergy, Todd.
It rhymes.
Like poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get on to TV talk, is there anything else that I missed?
No, I think you nailed everything.
So that wraps up the main portion of episode 374, Long Box Heroes. We're going to get into TV discussion about The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. So if you don't want it spoiled or don't want to get into it, next week we're going to get into the big Earth X crossover and all that sort of thing. We're always a week behind on this sort of thing, especially with double the amount of stuff to watch. So we bid you adieu. If you're going to be hanging out for TV talk, we're going to get right into it. All right. So The Flash. Episode entitled Therefore I Am, where we get the origin of Clifford DeVoe, a.k.a. The Thinker.
Mm-hmm.
Where we kind of left out in the discussion last week, where the end of the episode was they do the big attack, they have him tracked down because DeVoe is such a common name, there's literally thousands of them in Central City. The Council of Wells figure out it's this one, and they show up and it's just a really old professor in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that's never bitten the Flash and the Heine in the past.
Yep.
So again, through a series of flashbacks, we get his we get a little bit of retconning from the very first episode of The Flash, where he and his wife are in the crowd when the big accident happens. And then there's a lot of stuff in the episode where no one believes Barry. Barry is with us, and by us I mean the viewers of the show, that we all know that DeVoe is up to something bad. Barry believes it as well. None of his other crew believes it. So Barry goes and makes a whole bunch of stupid mistakes.
Right.
Horrible, horrible, stupid mistakes. But he does find the camera in the samurai droid thing's head.
Right, the samuroid.
Samurai just never feels right to say for me for some reason. I don't know.
That's good.
He confronts DeVoe. DeVoe essentially says, here's my plan, but there's nothing you could do about it because I'm smarter than you. And, of course, there's the, you know, Earth-X crossover that's happening as we speak, and Barry and Iris' wedding, which is a good way to close out for our mid-season break in 2 weeks.
Right.
What did you think of the episode? Anything else that you want to discuss that I might have glossed over?
All right, let's just start out that I actually really love the Thinker's origin.
Right.
Because in a world where we've had three, you know, species as villains, and the only really the best one was the original Eobard and all that, I like the fact that the Thinker's different as a villain right off the bat. That's huge points for me. But in the beginning, he tries to help. He's trying to help the world. He's literally trying to help the world. And things go wrong. It's like he's gotten a rotten, the short end of the stick. And he, you know, decides, that's it. I'm taking over kind of a thing. I'm going to fix things my own way. And I actually felt for the Thinker. It was like I felt bad for him, even though he's a villain and he's a great character, and the character constantly reminds me of Benedict Cumberbatch, from he's obviously Doctor Strange in the Marvel movies, but he reminds me more of like a Sherlock Holmes when he's doing that series. But I'm down with it. I'm happy with the Thinker, and I love the fact that this episode literally had wig work in it at the end, Joe.
What wig? Remind me.
It's he's sitting in the chair and they're like, you have not been plugged in to the machine.
Oh, and they show the brain. Yeah.
She pulls the wig literally off the top of his head. And I'm like, Joe, you get little wig work.
But this wig work looked good. Now, the special effects on the exposed brain were a little suspect, but.
What? And then the tentacles come out and plug into his brain?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's my favorite.
Little suspect.
Little?
Just a touch.
I don't know. What was the thing that jumped out at you that you thought I was talking about?
No, I don't know. I glossed over everything. There was like really no B or C plots in this.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you said, chugging towards that giant crossover, basically. And right. The wedding, like you said. So, like I said, I enjoyed the episode. How did you like it overall?
I liked it. Flash has been good this season. This has been no different, and yeah, I was very happy with the way this turned out.
Cool.
So, Legend of Tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
entitled Welcome to the Jungle, they another anachronism, It appears as though while they're on the Wave Rider, a different actress is playing, Isis.
Isis, yes.
Also, Vixen immediately gets her hair from done up in braids when she's boxing to perfectly straight within 3 seconds.
She's on a future ship.
Right.
Wig work, too, by the way.
Okay. Then in a tip of the cap to, just as a B story, I have to get this out of the way. In a tip of the cap to last week's episode of The Flash, Eugene Grimby of the World Council has taken people from time to assist him with figuring out a problem to separate himself from the Firestorm Matrix and leave Jefferson with it. And one of the people that he has brought in is Sir Isaac Newton, who is wearing, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and this covers a lot of ground, Todd, the worst wig in the history of the show.
What? But that's a... See, that's the whole thing. Isaac Newton, they wore fake wigs back in the day.
It looks sad and embarrassing. No one says, let's do a second take and maybe, like, actually have it sitting on his head, not 3 inches off his head.
But that's the whole thing, Joe. Those wigs were meant to look stupid back then.
Hmm.
Go back in history and look at Isaac Newton wigs, and you'll see.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Right.
The main is they see an anachronism in Vietnam during the late 60s. Mick does not want to go there because he knows his dad is there. And he says, what are the chances of me running to my dad here? And of course, within seconds of him saying so, he does. It turns out there is a group of locals who are under the sway of Gorilla Grodd. There's a big battle with that, which Vixen resolves in a very awesome way, or at least attempts to, but points out a implicit flaw in the Gorilla Grodd power scheme and characters. There's a lot of resolution there between Mick and his dad. And it is pointed out to us here, and I'm a dum-dum for just now noticing this, that every episode they've gone to a point in time where they have interacted with a ancestor or a past version of themselves.
Right.
It's as though the random anachronisms that they're picking are not so random.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was, like, obviously, you know, here we are, what, some 7 episodes into the season. I'm just now getting on board because they told me.
Right.
Right.
I figured it out. They told me.
I figured it out because they told me. I told you I'm a dumb guy.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of nitpicks about the episode, but overall I liked it. What did you think? And I'll get into my nitpicks.
I really liked it. It wasn't the best episode. I think the best part about it is all the cliche, like, Vietnam movie, visions that you have there. There's, like, you know, the cam, like, Ray as the cameraman and as a journalist. Just everything. There's, like, you could pick all the movies that you want to have the music, and I think that helps a lot with the period pieces that Legends of Tomorrow are.
Mm-hmm.
The things that really stand out for me was I thought Grodd getting better.
Oh, yes.
The visual.
It was the absolute best Grodd ever looked.
I think.
In all the episodes of anything.
I was actually watching Peter Jackson's King Kong over the weekend. And I think they just stole that program.
Oh, okay.
Like individual hairs on Grodd now are fantastic. Like, that's where he shines. He's not just like, oh, we'll CGI like every, you know, every 30th hair and then it just a flat color in between. You're like, oh my God, like, he looked ridiculously awesome. So that's one of them. And then after that, my nitpick is Mick's father doing the fake voice like Mick. It's just like, him, he sounds like he's been gargling broken glass since he's 3. You sound like a guy who wants to sound like a guy who's been gargling broken glass since he's 3. And I never bought it. I was like, it just doesn't come naturally. It does for the actor who plays Mick Rory.
I let it slide a little bit only because I liked the emotional stuff with Mick that ended up happening in the episode.
Oh, I get it, but yeah. That's my... You know what? If I'm going to have a qualm about Legends of Tomorrow, it is the crappy voice work in some of the episodes.
So, my nitpicks about the episode were Gorilla Grodd can read minds. Not?
No, he could just control minds.
Okay.
That's so, what I always thought.
Right, I was under the impression that he could... Well, doesn't he take possession of White Canary later in the episode?
That's controlling a mind.
Okay, controlling a mind. Okay.
Right.
So we'll scrap that he should have known that Vixen didn't know about the attack that was coming in. Mm-hmm. And his reaction to it was poor. But anyway, that's on me. So for the most of the episode, White Canary is in a coma.
Right.
But they just leave her laying unattended in her superhero costume.
Well, she's Gideon is watching.
Right.
The supercomputer.
Right. That's your answer to everything. A supercomputer did it.
Yep.
If something on Legends of Tomorrow happens and doesn't make any sense, you could say a wizard did it.
That's right. You're a wizard, Harry.
Oh, no, that was Flash last week. But no, this was good. This was fine. The cliches, but of course this one seemed to be a little bit more setting up for the big Earth-X crossover or whatever it's called, Crisis on Earth-X or whatever.
Yes. Do you even know what Earth-X is? Just curious.
Isn't it the planet in the DC Universe where the Nazis took over?
Yeah, the Nazis won World War II.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, again, in our sensitive times, I wonder how that's going to play out, as I haven't watched Supergirl or Arrow yet.
My favorite is, and I haven't watched, I watched a little bit of the first one, but the Fancy Gentleman saying, I wonder how much merchandise from this episode they're going to make.
Well, I'm sure they'll make it, they just won't have the logos on them, you know?
Oh. I'm looking for the crossover, so.
Yep. And we'll be talking about it here next week.
That's right, four whole episodes, because you have to watch Supergirl.
Right.
It's pivotal.
You were tweeting about it, and I could have swore, because I remember last year, they said, Supergirl's part of the crossover, and it was literally the last 30 seconds of the episode.
And then it was replayed in the first 30 right. seconds of The Flash.
And they said it again this year, that it's like, it's an epic two-night event, all four episodes matter. And I'm like, well, they're telling me this, and they've lied to me before. I'm not really sure. So I waited for confirmation from other sources before I went forward.
DC TV is the Marvel Comics of crossovers. It's like everything matters, and it doesn't.
It doesn't. This time it might. We'll
it
find
does.
Out.
This time it does.
Oh, okay. So. All right. So the TV was good this week, and then we'll have the big crossover to talk about next week.
Yes. So now I think that's everything.
All right. So for Todd, this is Joe closing out episode 374 of Longbox Heroes, and we'll see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!
What up, speaker?
You know, everybody always says that they always have to turn this part of the show down because you're so loud.
Why?
Because your volume's way up here. Nobody can see what I'm doing with my hands. And everybody else's volume is way down here. So then when you come in, it's this crazy loud man yelling.
Hey, yeah, boy, yeah, boy.
Okay, so this is week 13. We got 8 right last week.
8.
Let's try to do it again. Who do you think is going to win, the Redskins or the Cowboys?
Redskins.
All right. The Vikings or the Falcons?
Falcons.
The Patriots or the Buffalo Bills? The
Buffalo Bills.
Okay. The 49ers or the Bears?
49ers.
The Cowboys, I'm sorry, the Broncos or the Dolphins?
Broncos.
The Lions or the Ravens?
Ravens.
The Buccaneers or the Packers?
Packers.
All right. The Texans or the Titans?
The Titans.
The Colts or the Jaguars?
The Colts.
The Chiefs or the Jets?
The Jets.
The Browns or the Chargers?
The Browns.
It's 2 weeks in a row you picked the Browns. You know, they never win.
I know.
Okay. The Giants or the Raiders?
Giants!
Oh, man. The Rams or the Cardinals?
The Cardinals.
The Panthers or the Saints?
The Saints.
The Eagles and the Seahawks?
The Eagles.
And last but not least, the Steelers or the Bengals?
Bengals.
All right. That's it. Bye.
Bye, everybody. We're going into fight.
Catch you later, everybody.